Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And Zach.
They're all four people. That can only mean one thing. We must be reviewing a movie. But what movies are out that we could be talking about? We already did Guardians. Oh, the new Pirates, right? Is that...
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, Pirates of the Caribbean. Dead story should stay dead. That's what it's called, right?
No. We're going to talk about Wonder Woman, I think. Did everyone see it?
I was close. I thought Underpants. I thought it was Captain Underpants.
Yes. Similar.
Close.
So we're talking about the 70s TV show, right?
Yes. Linda Carter is
so
back.
So they binged the whole thing to prepare for this review.
Linda Carter's back with a vengeance.
And she's the president of the United States, but she's also a secret alien, right? That's all part of the same canon.
It's all part of the canon, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Good. I mean, it also explains how she, you know, was introduced in the 40s, but then all of a sudden was fighting crime in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. And she must know the doctor because then she traveled back in time to World War I.
Exactly. Could have just been touched by a weeping angel.
And somewhere along the lines, there's a blue, a blue portal in the sky.
There always is.
There always is.
Ain't that the truth?
No, I think Warner Brothers did a Wonder Woman movie.
I've heard tell.
Yeah.
That they actually attempted to make a non Zack Snyder esque movie.
And yet Zack Snyder had something to do with this.
Yes, we'll get into that. So yes, of course, we're talking about the latest offering from the DCEU, is Wonder Woman, starring the lovely Gal Gadot and the lovely Chris Pine.
Oh, you said it right.
Not to split hairs, but he did not say it right.
That's how I've heard it's supposed to be pronounced.
Gal Gadot. I've heard her pronounce it.
Gadot.
Gadot.
Yes.
Oh, not dot dot.
Because I'm obsessed with her. I went and listened to interviews after I saw the movie. And Gal Gadot.
I can appreciate that.
And now my marriage is over. Yes. But that's all right. I'm pretty sure one will.
Details. Details.
How many times did you watch those interviews? Just out of curiosity.
Well, what time of day are we talking about?
it really had less to do with watching them and more to do with where the zoom was on in the framing.
And where my pants were.
Yes.
And there goes our PG rating.
You know.
They were at the dry cleaners, John, because I like to take care of my clothes. That's what I was saying. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Uh-huh.
His mind came from the gutter, so it's always going to be there.
Yes.
Into the gutter it shall go.
Started from the gutter, now he's here.
Well, not much of a change then, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Right, so let's start this off. Spoiler-free first, right?
Yes, exactly. Let's go around the room. Let's do a spoiler-free initial reactions and thoughts, and we'll start with Zach.
Spoiler-free. Well, I couldn't believe that Ludendorff... Just kidding. I'm sure everyone's used to me saying this by now, but this time it's legit... This movie was phenomenal. It was a game changer. It was one of the best DC movies ever,
I feel like that statement needs an asterisk.
Explain the one of.
And in fact, one of the best comic book movies ever. It's at least top five in my mind.
Okay.
Yeah, comic book movies.
Explain the one of. That's what I want to hear.
One of? You mean as opposed to it being just the best?
Yes.
You can make that argument, and I'm not going to fight you.
How do you unseat? Superman for the Quest for Peace.
That's a very valid question.
Top spot. Catwoman came close.
Let us not forget the original Supergirl movie as well.
Yes.
Oh, God, I didn't even know that existed.
If they had made the Superman with the giant spider, that would have also unseated it.
Yes,
perhaps.
Okay, yeah, so that's my point. It's great. It's phenomenal. Someone else, go for it.
Okay, Ben, since you're the expert on DC films.
Sure. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done, despite the fact that there were, I felt, a lot of uncanny parallels to a certain other, period piece in the comic book universes.
And so much better than that one. But anyways, continue.
I might disagree with you on that point.
You're talking the first Avenger?
Yes.
Ugh.
There were a lot of parallels, and yes. I will unpack those later. But, that aside, I will agree that it's probably the best. It's the best movie in the DCEU so far.
Oh, sure.
It was definitely a version of Wonder Woman I can get behind seeing in more movies. And I'm hoping that the success of this movie does influence the way that the DCEU goes forward.
Okay. Strong words from a bearded man.
That's what my wife says often.
How about you, Johnny Boy?
There was a time back in 1978. And yes, some of us were alive back then. And no, we weren't black and white back then.
I was.
Well, it's because your beard had less gray in it. So back then, there was a movie that came out called Superman. It was the first time on the big screen for a superhero. And I remember being in that audience and just, I mean, there were times when people applauded and laughed. And it was a really amazing feeling. And the movie broke ground. Now, since then, we've had, literally tens of these movies. And I felt for the first time, again, that same feeling. Even Guardians of the Galaxy, which I really loved and is one of the few movies I could watch. I have watched again and again. I'm going to go back to the theater again to see it in the theater, because it was the first time in a theater that I saw an audience applaud, cheer, and, in general, just like have just the best time.
Amen.
And, and even with just a smidge, just a soupçon of Zack Snyder in it, it's, still, Patty Jenkins just overcame that and gave us this beautiful thing that is this Wonder Woman movie.
A soupçon of Jack Snyder.
That's all I can take of him.
That's the new book by John O'Grady, available on Amazon.com.
Well, it's a teaspoon of sewage and a barrel full of wine, but whatever.
All right. So as I have stated already in the video that we posted at our immediate reaction after seeing the movie, definitely the best DCEU movie so far. Very well done. They definitely raised the bar for the rest of their movies. But
you mean they have a bar for the rest of their movies?
Yes, there you go. They finally have a bar to set it to. Was it the best movie all the time? Did I feel the same way as I did when I first saw Superman? Probably not, but it was a very good movie, very entertaining, definitely worth a watch. Everyone should go see this movie. I really enjoyed it. I just have a couple, there's just a couple minor things. A lot of it has to do with that soupçon of Snyder that they threw in there. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute.
Might I ask, yes. Dave, did you take your daughter with you to see this movie?
No.
Did you ask your daughter if she wanted to go see this movie?
No, I was, we went, John and I went to a press
screening. Oh, right, that's right, that's right.
And then my daughter was working at the convention all weekend, so.
Ah.
Yes, so there wasn't an opportunity for her to go yet.
Well, I'm excited for you to be able to do that because you will understand the wonder of this film, no pun intended, somehow, when you see it with her, I think. The way my wife was moved by it was what I felt it to an extent, but I couldn't feel it the real way she did. And we'll get into it later. I didn't want to say too much off the bat.
Right.
But I second everything John said. I think it absolutely was groundbreaking.
By the way, I do have to appreciate the great female representation we have in this review episode today.
Yes.
Thank you.
And diversity.
Glad you noticed me. That's
we're really staring down the right side of the glass ceiling.
Yes. We're very diverse here. We're getting in touch with our female sides. How's that?
Beards of all lengths in this interview.
All right. With all that goodness out of the way, let's get into some spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen
the warning.
Oh, you watched the He/She for it too, didn't you?
I did actually watch that.
So there you go. There's your
good reviews. I'm just saying.
There's your spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it yet, you might want to turn it off the podcast now. Go see the movie and come back and listen to the rest of it. If you don't care about spoilers, here we go.
Or as I often suggest, just let the episode play through, but don't listen. Go watch the movie and then download the episode again and listen to it from here.
All right, so the first thing I want to say off the bat, like, in all complete seriousness, Gal, how do you say her name?
Gadot.
Gal Gadot made me appreciate her as an actress in this movie because there was a lot of range for her character. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really well done where she was, you know, she played that wide-eyed innocent up to the angry warrior, you know, so it was, you know, I thought she was really good in the movie. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that I appreciated that they did not cast her with any, like, they were very careful not to cast her with any sort of predilections that society would normally put upon gender roles and things like that. Like, to see that juxtaposition was really, I found humorous where it was supposed to be humorous and poignant where it was fitting for it to be poignant, like with, you know, such as the scenes where she's trying on clothes and, like, you know, asking how you fight in these things and like the whole, you know, sleeping together on the boat. You know, those sorts of moments where, you know, a woman of any other ilk, you know, might have some sort of social stigmas. And she was raised without any of that. And they were careful to write that well, I think. In the context of her upbringing.
Yes. And I also want to say, too, about Gal Gadot is certainly we were making jokes about her attractiveness because she's a stunningly beautiful woman, but that is irrelevant in the scope of the movie, which is remarkable. I wrote that after the movie that she was a goddess, or not just a goddess, but a god. I mean, she's above gender. She was just remarkable. The strength and poise that she had. I'm not saying not even the superhero, you know, not Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot. She is a remarkable on-screen presence. And, you know, she just brought this character to life in such a way that was really profound. And it's just, I mean, it was awe-inspiring, truly. My jaw was hanging the entire film. I was just so blown away by her power on screen. Really remarkable.
I agree. And here's the thing. Like, so the difference between, like, Marvel and DC is Marvel are people, humans, normal people trying to be heroes. And in DC, it's gods trying to be human, right? But this is like...
Except Batman.
Well, no, still, he's the god of knowledge, really. I mean, technically nobody can beat him with just, you know, a little bit of prep time. But
I'd say he sort of backed into that role. He didn't start there.
Right, but he's still trying to learn how to be human because he doesn't really know how, right? He can't deal with normal humanity.
Because he's broken.
Yes, but that's the thing. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. The point is that, you know, the way this was written, and I'm willing to say, is that so Snyder had nothing to do with the direction. That was all Patty Jenkins.
Yeah.
I'm willing to say that Snyder might be a better writer than he is a director. But then there are two other writers in here, so who knows?
There are. So it's unclear what the influence is between the three of them, and you know, how much was him and how much was the others.
But her character does a whole 360. She goes from normal to realizing she's a god to then going from god to trying to realize what humanity is what humanity has to do with her, right?
Right.
And that was the beautiful thing about this movie. And it's the thing that we didn't get with Superman. We watched her grow up. We watched her realize what she really wanted to do. We saw her feel things for people. She had all the feels. And, you know, I consider Gal Gadot a good actress. I think Patty Jenkins brought out, like, the best possible performance she could have had. And I'm hoping to God that this happens in the Justice League movie and that they're able to get this kind of performance out of the other actors too, because it was just you felt what she felt. You saw her struggling with people dying and in pain around her, and you felt when she finally said, oh, you know, screw this, I'm going to go do something. And you were like, yeah, that's right, you should. It was just great.
Well, I think one of the things you kind of said there too, that something that she's brought to the DCEU that's been missing since, I mean, I kind of feel it's been missing since the Donner Superman movies, is charm. You know, she was charming.
Yes. Yeah, you know? Absolutely right.
Like, which speaks to the range, is remarkable, because she is, as we said, her presence was just overwhelming, and yet she could be on that, you know, that levity. It was, absolutely. Well said. Very charming.
You're right. And you think about it, she was able to be charming. And then when she decided, you know, I'm going to go up here onto no man's land and, like, you know, take them all out. And she goes and does that. At no point are you questioning, like, her. She played the character so well, and she was directed so well that she just, you know, you're willing to accept these are two sides of the same person. Right. It wasn't one of those things where in some movies where you say, that character never would have done that.
The no man's land scene. Is there a better scene in comic book films? Yeah. I mean, my heart exploded. It was just unbelievable. It was breathtaking. Wait, I couldn't believe
what's
it.
What's remarkable about that scene is it almost didn't happen.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. I believe it was the studio fought hard against having that scene in there, and Patty Jenkins fought to keep it because they didn't get it. The studio didn't get it.
The studio doesn't understand it ever.
Because in every other case, you have a hero fighting against a villain, fighting against an army of bad guys or something like this. This was a fight that had nothing to do with her. And, you know, they didn't understand why she would get involved, why it made sense in the context of the film for her to get involved. They didn't see how this represented. This was her becoming Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Like, this was emblematic of her growth.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's the centerpiece of the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scene where she becomes Wonder Woman. And for the studio to not get that means they don't understand superheroes, period. She went and fought for the greater good. It had nothing to do with a personal vendetta or going after an arch enemy. It was, no, these people need help. I'm going to help her. I'm going to help them. I'm going to rise above myself and be a better person.
And it made her character somebody you really rooted for at that mm-hmm. very moment. And listeners, okay, spoilers, right? So basically they're walking through the trenches on one side of no man's land, and there's like people missing parts of their legs and whatever, and just, you know, death and destruction and violence and tragedy everywhere. And finally this woman comes up to her and says, please, my daughter, she's on the other side, she's in the town, and, you know, I can't help her, can you help her? And you could see Gal Gadot, you could see her, you could see Wonder Woman's heart break, and then become steel, and she just threw off her cloak and said, that's it, no more of this. And that's, you know, like you said, Dave, this is the reason why they failed with, you know, with Superman v. Batman and Superman. It's like, they just don't get it. These, you need to have these people, these heroes, have human sides to them. If they don't have human sides, we can't relate. If you can't relate, the movie is just a bunch of moving pictures. It's not something you're invested in.
By the way, I just have to ask a question, John. Is it your goal to pronounce her last name every possible different way throughout the course of the review?
Absolutely, yes. I'll just call her Gal. No, wait, that doesn't work.
It does, technically.
Galga, don't start with me. Hey, I should probably go.
All right, a ba-dum-tsh there or something. Rim shot.
Won the episode with that.
Yeah, so we all agree she was wonderful.
How about supporting cast?
Well, I was going to say, so here comes to my first criticism, and I don't know if you guys will agree with this or not, but I don't think we got Steve Trevor in the movie. I think we got Captain Kirk.
I disagree. Well, first of all, I caveat that by saying that I don't have a strong impression of how Steve Trevor should be as a character, because I have not read enough Wonder Woman comics to have a sense of what Steve Trevor should be like. Mm-hmm. That said, I thought Steve Trevor was what he needed to be in this movie, and I thought it was fitting. However, he did also, I think, like I said earlier, the parallels with the first Avenger, like it seemed like he was, wherever Wonder Woman couldn't explicitly be Captain America, he was being Captain America. With riding the motorcycle through the forest and flying the sacrificing himself on the plane in the end to save the day. All those, like there was parallels, all I'm saying. And it wouldn't surprise me now that Joss Whedon's heavily involved in Justice League if there's a scene where, you know, Wonder Woman challenges Batman to put on the suit and then you know, fit hits the Shan
or a scene where there's a jet and a motorcycle drops out of it and Wonder Woman's driving it. Oh wait.
Perhaps. Nice. Now you're jumping ahead of a movie or two.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
See, I don't see it. I see, okay, having read a lot of the DC stuff.
Hold on a second.
What?
Are you saying you don't see the parallels between?
No, he's saying he doesn't see the Steve Trevor critique.
Yes, right. Okay. Thank you. Keep up with me, Dave. No, seriously, I don't. Having read that a lot of the DC stuff and more lately the animated stuff, right? Steve Trevor is usually painted as, actually, I'd say the Captain Kirk of the new Star Trek universe was modeled after Steve Trevor.
Oh.
Because that's what Steve Trevor was. He was an agent, and he took
brash.
Risks, and he was brash. But he didn't. They didn't play him like that in here. It wasn't the swagger type of brash. It was the holy crap! Everything's going to hell. I have to do something crazy.
Right. And hold being shit together.
Right, and being scared and understanding how close to the edge he is the whole time, and seeing it on his face.
To me, the more classic Steve Trevor is the captain, he's like the leader that the other soldiers look to, you know, and he's not a cowboy. He's a strong military leader. So that's why it was like, well, he's more of the Captain Kirk cowboy type in this movie. Yeah,
I don't see that. I see what you're describing in the original Steve Trevor. I feel like he was a very capable military man. He was a spy, as John was saying. He had that savviness to him, and he wasn't just doing things willy-nilly and brashly. He was, I mean, that's kind of the whole point. Like he wanted to be careful, and Wonder Woman said, no, I'm going to fix this now, you know, and he tried to stop her and hold her back. So I don't see that Captain Kirk in him.
Right.
And that was mentioned in other reviews, and I'm going to piggyback off of them. So totally not totally my idea, although I did notice this. It was a constant tug of war between the two of Steve Trevor saying, look, no, you can't fix everything. We have to do this thing we have to do the greater good. We have to do the thing that's going to help in the future, that's going to stop the war. And she's like, yeah, but this guy here is dying. You know, I need to, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to help people. So it was always this tug of war between I need to fix things now. No, you have to let it go. You have to leave that guy in pain. He might die, but we're going to stop the war.
Right. If anything, that makes him more like the captain from Galaxy Quest. in that he's dealing with an innocence that can't comprehend these things and trying to massage them slowly to realities.
Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe to me it's more of a criticism of Chris Pine. I just didn't think, I don't know, I didn't see him in that role.
I enjoyed him a lot in this movie, and I'm going to defer to our chief DC apologist on this one.
Yeah, I actually think he did a good job, because it wasn't...
No, that's
I'm not the chief DC apologist. Good, okay.
No, actually, it's on my card.
Business cards.
You know I liked Batman versus Superman, right? Okay, let's just...
You're the DCEU apologist.
Ah, there you go. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Good point.
Okay, yes. DCEU apologist, what do you say?
About Steve Trevor specifically?
Yeah.
Or Chris Pine.
I'm with you and Ben. And Chris Pine, I don't think it was just a reflected Captain Kirk. I feel like he was a completely different character. I mean, certainly they have, you know, similarities because they're military leaders, but beyond that, I don't think it was just a pale image of him. I thought he was his own character. I really did love the push and pull, you know, between he and Gal Gadot, and, you know, ultimately that he did capitulate to her and understood that she was more capable than him. You know, that was pretty remarkable throughout the film, is this constant reminder to all the men, oh, wait, it's a capable woman? Wait, no, that can't be. And then it has to keep happening for them to finally get it, or for one of them to finally get it.
I am glad, actually, that they did not make him the typical male bravado foil in this movie. The fact that, like, he was able to capitulate to that fairly early on and not be, you know, have bruised egos over it. I'm happy they did not take that sort of adversarial tack that he might, you know, be sensitive about this strong woman around him.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on this Captain Kirk thing, when
Chris Pine, I liked him as Captain Kirk, by the way, a lot.
I know, but the way the character was portrayed, so Captain Kirk was brash when he didn't have to be. He was just always that way. The way this was played, he was brash and you know, and a little bit crazy when he had to be in order to get people out of a jam or to save somebody.
Right.
But he did it reluctantly, but he did it because, as he said in the beginning of the movie, I tried doing nothing and it didn't work. So now what's left? Doing something.
Yes. Right. Yes. Captain Kirk would not have rolled his eyes before stealing the notebook of Dr. Poison. He would have done it with glee.
Yes. But
Steve Trevor did it.
He would have saw it as the start of an adventure.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I did really, and I really enjoyed the scene when they were going to the party with the driver, and the whole lost invitation thing. I thought that was very well, very suavely done.
Yes. All right.
Yes. Go ahead.
No. After you.
No. So all right. So I mean, you know, I'll defer to you guys. I don't know. So the other band of merry men, as it were.
Yeah, I felt that's actually a place where I felt they could have done. I mean, they weren't flat. I won't say that they were flat because they weren't. But there was depth to them for the most part. They were an interesting motley crew, but they were mostly, other than the Arab character. Why am I not saying what his actual character name is? Samir. Samir was an interesting and useful character, but the other two, like the chief, kind of did some things, but their gunman was essentially useless.
But that was the point. Yeah, they were all broken men.
I get it. It bothered me that, like, he just seemed like. Why do they need to bring him? Like, I would think that a lot of times in these hero journey type things, everyone has a vital point where they overcome adversities and do something important to promote the story success. Charlie didn't have that moment.
I feel like he did, but it was kind of off screen, if that makes sense. It was after, so in the bell tower scene, he couldn't take out the sniper, but once, you know, they had won the day and they're dancing away at night and he's finally singing. At that point, you know, he has released some demons. And then We don't really see a whole lot of it, but he is useful in the final battle when they're, you know, infiltrating the air base and, you know, that stuff. So, yeah. So he did turn it around. We just didn't get, like, an on-screen, that's the moment where he was able right. to pull the trigger type
yeah,
of thing.
I'm just surprised, like, they like to do those sorts of things in movies, so I'm surprised that they didn't have.
And
like,
I'm kind of glad they didn't, because it's not about him, you know? Yeah. And there was actually, and it was his moment of overcoming was that moment where he's singing, you know? And that is not an inherently masculine thing, or, you know, by the social norms that we ascribed to way back when. So he was able to overcome his inability to commit violence or heroism or whatever through nonviolence.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It's good that we got the amount of characterization with the supporting cast that we did. I mean, usually movies can't even manage that because they just throw in a bunch of, you know, and then here's the red shirts picking right. up the Captain yeah. Kirk thing. And that's it. You know, you get the Zack Snyder treatment. Each one has one specific trait and that's it. Well, but these guys were more well-rounded than you'd normally see.
Right. Like, going back to the comparison to Captain America, the first Avenger, the Kallen Commandos in that movie they didn't really develop their personalities.
No, they didn't. Except for Bucky.
Right.
Except the rest of them, and a little bit with, what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. The guy who wears the hat.
Dum-Dum.
Dum-Dum Dugan, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, you got enough development out of them that you knew their names and you knew their personalities, but that was about the extent of it. You know, and I will say that that's actually something that the Marvel Cinematic Universe could be doing a little bit better. Like, similarly with the Warriors 3, they were never really strong in their depiction. Like, they were mm-hmm. useful where they were useful, but otherwise they were just...
Hell, one of them got replaced between films.
Yes.
Nobody noticed.
I noticed. Only because I like the actor who played him the second time.
Yeah, well, yeah, when Chuck shows up in Asgard, yes. you start to ask some questions. But
right. It's true.
But I kind of felt that the reason they got so much development, and we saw that they were all broken men, was what helped Diana, Wonder Woman, whatever you want to call her, see...
Interestingly, she was never called Wonder Woman in the entire movie.
Yep.
That is true. So Diana, it gets her to see both sides of humanity, you know, like, yes, there's a war going on and men are armed and they're fighting and these are supposed to be these tough men that are going to fight and kill people, but they can't, you know, they have something wrong with them. So.
And note too, that she's the one who kind of saves Charlie.
Right.
She went just by saying, we need you to sing, you know, and not in a condescending manner. But, you know, to give him a sense of purpose and belonging. And, yeah, that's what brought him back.
Yep.
Agreed. Right. So I think it's through that is how she's able to see the good side in man or woman, whatever. You know what I mean.
In humanity.
Humanity.
Mankind, yeah.
So that makes them important characters.
Yeah, I felt like they all had enough depth. I didn't feel like any of them were shallow. I felt like, and you know, they're not the main characters, so they don't
right.
need to be as fleshed out. But yeah, I felt like they were a very solid addition to
right. And that's why I caveated my statement, not saying that they were not flat. I just was surprised by the fact that they didn't put the cherry on top, so to speak, for each of their characters' contributions to the team.
Right.
Because they're so apt to do that in these types of movies.
Now, moving away from that, I guess, I had heard some people say that the CGI was poor quality.
I didn't get that sense. I thought it was
It was, and I was disappointed by the fact that they didn't put more money into it, and that was all. Like, it didn't take away from the film for me. It was just a reminder that they were like, this is a female-led superhero movie, so we're not going to put as much money into it to make it look better. Because the CGI simply did not look as good as Batman vs. Superman or even Man of Steel or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I never caught it.
No, I said it after the movie, Zach. There's the scene where she's on the horse and they were at the base and she's mm-hmm. riding on the back of the horse and she jumps off of it. Like, you can tell that's a CGI Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and that was a super cool scene. And that, I mean, that's not the only one. Frankly, all the CGI, in my mind, was not up to snuff. And it didn't take away from the movie at all, in my mind. I thought it was still phenomenal. I just wish they had put more money into it because the film deserved it. But I don't think they'll make that mistake again.
Yeah.
I will say I hadn't seen any examples. What sticks out in my mind as the depictions of bad CGI is when it's clear that the character is CGI because their face doesn't look right or because some aspect of them looks fake. And I don't recall seeing any instances of that myself throughout this film.
Yeah,
like you see those, like for instance in like the Matrix, the second Matrix film when he's fighting the army of Agent Smiths, like it becomes very apparent there.
That's 2002.
Sure, I get that. But I'm saying is that type of there's something about the way that looks that it still shows up sometimes in films that like it, just something in that uncanny valley area.
Right. Yeah, and I there's no scene where I thought it was that bad,
They never showed her up close for that to be a problem.
No, and again, I'm not saying it took away from the film at all in my mind. I felt like there were just a lot of action sequences that used the CGI that just they could have spent a little bit more time and money on it. But it really wasn't a problem.
I think, personally, from what I remember, all the CGI in the beginning of the movie, when they're on Paradise Island, is really good. And I think the CGI in the end battle, she looks real through the whole thing.
Yes.
It's just some of the stuff in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I take what I said back. You're absolutely right. I agree. The end battle was great. There weren't any flaws there in terms of CGI and the beginning as well. But yeah, there was just some stuff in the middle. Like, okay, for instance, when she's fighting in the little Belgian town and as the battle comes to a close and she's using her whip and kicking everyone's ass, which is super awesome. But like when she whips that guy over and jump kicks him to, you know, outer space, that doesn't look great. It's super cool and I loved it and I still just had a rager at that point, but actual CGI was not phenomenal in that instance.
See, you mean a comic book rager, right?
What did you think I was talking about?
It's emotional rush is what he's going for.
Isn't that what that
That's the thing. I didn't really notice it, and I guess it was a combination of I was too busy being invested in the action because the movie was just that good, and the fact that they never allowed Uncanny Valley to be a problem. I mean, because we've seen this, especially with like the Spider-Man movies where they have to see, because no human bends like that, right? some of these things are and these are superhero movies. So some of the action, there's just no human that's going to take that risk. They're not going to be, they're not insurable.
I think if you go see the movie, like, I think you're right. We were caught up in the seeing Wonder Woman and it being such a good movie that you probably missed a lot of it. I feel if you go see it again, you'll notice a little bit. And again, it's like Zach's saying, it's not horrible, but it's just enough to be like, yeah, that's not, doesn't look quite right.
I think the next Wonder Woman appearance will look better. And I'm talking about the sequel, not Justice League, because of course they'll put enough money into Justice League, but I'm guessing the next Wonder Woman sequel will not have any of those same issues.
Yeah.
Because they'll finally recognize that she can hold her own.
Yeah. We still won't get a Wonder Woman action figure though.
We should, though.
Yeah, I can't see how they'd excuse it this time.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, the next one's supposed to be set in America.
That's the current rumors.
Do we talk about the villains now?
Yes. So let's not talk about the main villain yet. Let's talk about the two the villains.
Lucidorf and Dr. Maru.
Yes, or Dr. Yes. Poison.
Or Dr. Poison,
as he's affectionally known.
Yeah.
Poison.
So there's another, like, a slight criticism. Is it just me, and you guys can say no, don't they at first come off as your basic, flat, I'm bad for the sake of being bad villains in a superhero movie.
Ludendorff definitely does. I think Dr. Marrow or Dr. Poison, you know, comes across more as someone who's broken and fixated. And I think that that's can be considered stereotypical sometimes, but I felt that she was more well-rounded, I think, as a villain than Ludendorff was.
Okay.
Certainly, but Ludendorff was profoundly one-dimensional.
Although yes. I did feel, again, along with parallels, there was a superhero, super soldier serum in there.
There was. You're right. There was.
Yes, he inhaled it.
Yeah. So it wasn't a serum. It was a
mist.
It was a vapor.
A vapor. Yes.
Oh wow! Totally there were different. Vaping back in World War I.
Yeah,
but here's the thing. Okay, of the villains that we were given, the best villain out of all of it was World War I.
Yeah.
It was a vicious villain.
Yeah, because she fought against it, had to prevail against it. There was not much she could do. It was like, how do you fight against a war between, what was it, 130 countries or something crazy like that? It was the perfect foil. No matter how powerful she was, she wasn't going to be able to stop the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which became her focus is, hey, you know, if I kill Ares, I'm going to stop all of this.
Right.
And that was another tug of war between her and Trevor, which was, you know, no, you don't understand. War is because we're just stupid.
Right. We're flawed.
And for that reason, Ludendorff didn't really need to be any more than what he was. Even Dr. Maru.
This is true.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there's something interesting, too, again, about Trevor's character, or Chris Pine, you know, is... Even after he saw her after he saw everything on Paradise Island, and he saw Diana do all these amazing things, and like there's no explanation for it, he still didn't seem like he believed her about Ares and the god of the gods and all that stuff.
Well, he did it one line.
I read that differently. I didn't read it as a disbelief. I read it as it was that line of. Black and white versus shades of gray, in that he didn't disbelieve that Ares was possibly real, given what he'd seen, he knows humanity well enough to know that all of this could just as easily be man against man and with Ares having no involvement whatsoever. Yeah, but he wasn't sure how to explain that to her.
And they did have that one conversation that he had with the rest of the characters that, you know, what I guess while they were going to the castle where, you know, he had told them about Paradise Island and they were like, are you kidding me? And he's like, well, you know, given everything that I've seen, maybe she is right. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He believed in her and he believed in her power and her strength. He hadn't seen enough to believe that there was truly an Ares, a god of war behind the scenes pulling the strings. And he couldn't just accept on faith that there was because the risk was too high to do that. So, you know, ultimately when he did see Ares and finally understood who he was, he still had to do his part. And, you know, so I don't feel like his disbelief, if that's what you want to call it, was problematic or you know, like a flaw in his character.
Yeah.
Okay. So sorry. Okay. So then to get to because I was thinking of the scene, right? So all right, so we have the general. What was his name again?
Ludendorff.
Ludendorff.
Just think Luden's, you know, sore throat.
So she believes Ludendorff is Ares in disguise.
Right.
Trying to keep the war going as they're trying to reach an armistice deal to stop the war. And so she goes after him and fights him. And like I said, and she kills him.
Uh-huh.
So this is where two big reveals happen in the movie, right?
Uh-huh.
Where...
Right.
So the first reveal was, through most of the movie, you believe they went with the original origin of Wonder Woman, where she was made out of clay, and they prayed to Zeus, and she came to life.
Right. They 52'd it, basically.
Right, but then, no, it's the modern, I'm sorry, the New 52 no. origin of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, don't say modern, because I still don't like it. But
where she's her mother, what's her mother's name again?
Hippolyta.
Hippolyta, yeah.
Yeah, Hippolyta and Zeus hooked up, and she was born from that.
I don't know that they revealed that to be the case, though, did they?
Yeah,
did they
I don't. Say? I'm what not they sure say? That they did.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't say anything about any copulation. It was just that he could have just. I mean, done a was it? What do you call it? One of the other goddesses he birthed her out from his brain.
Well, yeah, Athena.
Athena.
Athena. So he could have pulled that, but you know, and just given the child to Hippolyta. So.
Yeah, I don't think at any point they actually explicitly say that she was...
No, but that is the origin in the comic. So.
But what they did reveal is that she was the God Killer.
Yes, that was her purpose. That's why he made her. And that's, right. I think, all that matters.
Right.
Well, again, that like I said, that's how they told the story in the New 52. That's why I was going with that. So.
But the thing is that it was a... Okay, some people I've heard figured it out. But it was really a cool effect when she took the supposed "quote unquote" God Slayer sword, tried to ram it through him. Well, the bad guy, and you know, well, we were talking about Lupin,
the real bad guy.
Yes, yeah. Lupin. So she attacked Lupin with the sword, and it just like what disintegrated as it touched him.
That's because it wasn't silver. She didn't. Think
yeah,
about
yeah.
It.
Oh. It's that werewolf thing. That always gets you.
Yeah, I don't think he wasn't Lupin in this movie.
Oh, he wasn't? Oh, well then I'm just confused.
I will say though, like I don't know how you guys felt about that reveal, but the moment like within 5 seconds of that character coming on screen when they were still in London, I turned to my daughter and said, "I think that's Ares."
Yeah. Yeah, I did the same thing. Yeah, I knew. And it was, I mean, because it would have been too easy for it to be Ludendorff. And, like, it was, which would have been fine, but it wouldn't have. Yeah, it's not like this twist, if you even want to call it that, because it is. But it's not like it really adds that much of an added dimension. But what it did is it created that moment where she had to question everything, where she had to question humanity and their drive. So it wasn't a pointless twist. It wasn't a twist for the sake of just being a twist.
Right.
But yeah,
it is. I do find it interesting though that she didn't. There wasn't a moment there where she questioned the fact that she literally just murdered someone.
Yeah. Well, no. She knew that was her singular purpose, or she felt believed that was her singular purpose.
Well, that was true, and that was mentioned on several other reviews and by several other people I've talked to about this. It's like yes. I believe in love and peace and humanity. Bam, bam, bam. 52 Germans down. It's like, you know, just laying waste to them left and right.
That's because she's the goddess of war love.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough thing to sell because you can also just say, well, you look at all the horrible things he did. You know, in the war, I mean, he was creating a mustard gas that would go through a gas mask, so it would just even kill more people.
And he killed the little Belgian town that she loved. So I mean, even if she knew that he was an Ares, I don't think she would have regretted killing him.
Probably. Right.
And that was it. That was also a turning point for her. That was like, that's when you begin to realize that's. See, the point of being a hero isn't like selflessly constantly throwing yourself into situations and prevailing. It's the fact that you finally realize sometimes you're not going to win, and still going ahead.
Yeah.
And that proved, you know, I mean, the look on her face when she came out, you know, all the people that they had just partied with the night before were all dead, and only because they were chucking this new gas down on it. Onto the village from the castle where they were having a party for it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of messed up.
It was kind of messed up.
Right. So then we reveal that Ludendorff is actually Ares. And here's...
Sir Patrick was Ares.
Yes.
No, that's what I meant. Yes. Sir Patrick is actually...
Ludendorff is just an asshole.
Yes. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Sir Patrick
He might have been the god of assholes. We don't know.
Well, that's true.
They never said he wasn't.
But, here, clearly no powers came with that title.
Yes.
Here is definitely the scene that it feels like maybe Zack Snyder took over.
Well, to be fair, it's easy to drag Zack Snyder's name around in this. It's my guess, because he didn't write this. Alan Heinberg wrote the screenplay.
Right.
And Zack Snyder and two other people are credited for contributing to the story. My guess is his contribution was solely related to how it tied into the DCEU and not the story that they told throughout World War I itself.
No, that's the thing. See, there was like this demarc. It was the most awesome picture up until Lupin showed himself. I'm going to call him Lupin because he's Lupin. but up until that point, the characterization was awesome. The backgrounds were awesome. The story was awesome. Her emotional journey was awesome. And then we got basically Superman versus the big thing?
What Doomsday.
The thing that
Doomsday.
Well, wasn't really Doomsday, but you know.
But it was.
Yeah.
But you know, the problem is there's no way that scene comes across as a compelling scene because it's a god versus god type scene.
But
like,
it didn't have to be.
But it was. Like he tried to be persuasive and billing himself as the god of truth and like trying to justifying his actions by having tried to show the gods, you know, the evils of humanity, you know, and you know that they should get rid of them to make for a better world the way it was before humanity. But, and all that's compelling as it is, you know, potentially, you're still dealing with, you know, Wonder Woman, who is, you know, basically female Superman in this movie, as far as her power set, even though she's not fully realized it. And, you know, a Greek god, you know, still, you know, come to life, so to speak, with full power set. There's no way that comes across as it's impossible in that situation to not have it feel like we've just gone Dragon Ball Z in this movie.
Well, but that's the problem. It's impossible. They wrote themselves into a corner. You're talking somebody who's just realized that they might be a godling or
demigod.
Demigod, if you want to go by Percy Jackson rules, and going against a god who's been around for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't make any sense. And then like you said, it did go Dragon Ball Z, and we got all the standard crap. We got exposition. We got haha, you'll never prevail. You got they're not worth it. Or it's just
right. They don't deserve it.
You went right down the list of all the points of really bad dialogue, exposition / boss battle crap.
Yeah. All the way down to her being, you know, on the ropes and doubting herself and remembering something important that brings in humanity.
Well, okay, here's my question, though.
To victory.
Remove Ares from the film, then. What does she do in the end?
But that's the thing. They could have done a whole bunch of stuff. They could have had it where Ares was just weak and she outwitted him. Because, supposedly Wonder Woman's not just a warrior. She is an intellectual. And you know, maybe she pulls something out of all the studies that she had had for whatever hundreds of years that she was growing up on the island. Mm. You know,
I think that would have felt too much like out of left field, though, the way that the rest of this movie was written.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, what's worse, you know?
Well, but hang on a second. I think you're laboring under the assumption that Ares is a fully powered, fully realized god of war when he states explicitly that he was, you know, sort of knocked from his throne with his battle with Zeus. So if you're one of your issues that you take with it is that she is a little godling and therefore she cannot kill a god. If he's not, you know, what he once was, then she could. Was that what I'm understanding? Part of your issue is with that?
Yeah. Unless, but they never gave that, impression that he was less than a full god.
He said it explicitly, actually. He said, Yeah, he's after my battle with Zeus. I lost my power. They didn't show him in his little toga and somehow pecs that had to be CGI because there's no way that Lupin
has pecs. Because it's Lupin, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he said explicitly, I lost, most of my power. So he wasn't, the original God of War. So they could very well have been equals in that regard.
All right, I'll give it that. But the boss battle was still a bunch of hooey that led up to the power of love compels you. And, she wins.
The power of love does.
But that is the power of love. I mean, Huey Lewis told us about this many years ago.
Somebody get a guitar.
Can you feel it? I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that, John. I didn't. No. I get your argument, and yes, I agree that it did. It was God versus God at that point, and it does end up feeling less compelling as a result. That's just tantamount to that type of scene. But at the same time, I don't see it as a blemish in the movie's plot line. I think it was an inevitable conclusion. The way that it was written out, the way that she was constantly pursuing Ares, I think an ending of this movie where it was just discovered that there was no Ares would have felt hollow. Mm-hmm. I think she had to have both face the what's the word I'm looking for, the imperfections of man. And the realization of those shades of gray while also facing what she was seeking to face for her to come to any sort of resolution. She had to face her demons, and her demons were Ares at this point. Yeah. So I think that to hollow that would be a disservice. And so I think that they did right by having that boss battle happen.
If she had never had an opponent who was anywhere near her level, it would have just all felt too easy, too. Right. So, she had this god that she had to overcome, a true adversary, and she did. And that's,
And there would be criticism that they kid-gloved one of the most powerful female DC heroes because she was a woman.
Yeah. I actually don't see any flaws in the ending.
Okay. See, I'll give you some of those points, but the thing is that even if he wasn't as powerful as he had been, he still had thousands of years of battle experience,
and he had
already met her. So what's this whole monologuing of trying to get her on his side, because he should have known that wasn't going to be possible,
because for one she did have
some cracks in her belief. She did have some cracks in her armor at the end there when she saw right. that maybe indeed man was to blame for this, and he maybe, he could have reasonably thought, it's like the come to the dark side moment, I mean, she has to doubt for a minute. And then,
but he didn't have cookies.
I guess my question is this, John. If he was Ares, a different way to play this, if he was Ares but didn't reveal himself so that she never ended up facing Ares, what would be the end game there that you would think made sense in this movie?
They could have done anything. They could have had a lesser avatar, or she could have outwitted him. She could have, it could have.
No, I'm saying what anything. If, because here's the thing. He has two choices here. He either reveals himself and fights her and tries to defeat her himself, or he doesn't reveal himself at all. And so you're suggesting a third option where he reveals himself, but she outwits him, when she's so innocent to the ways of the world as it is. And there's really not that scholastic, side of her hadn't really been revealed at any previous point in this movie other than her understanding of languages.
And books on sex, but that was.
Yeah, but, okay.
she was apparently very well read on that.
Right. But my point is, I think that would have felt more hollow and more MacGuffin-ish than what they did.
I was still sitting there thinking of the Incredibles where the guy went, you caught me monologuing again.
Yeah. So I don't know.
There was a little bit of exposition, but it wasn't, I didn't feel like we were beat over the head with it.
All right, so all of that aside, let me tell you what my issue with the ending of the movie is.
Okay.
We don't care. We want to argue more.
You wanted the God of War to be a woman.
I wanted, no, the Wonder Woman killing Ares at the end of the movie is akin to Batman killing the Joker at the end of the 89 Batman movie.
Yes.
You know?
It is, that is a point. And I do find it, like, there was one of the things that I noticed, they both established that Greek mythology was real, and then conveniently destroyed any of it from existing for future fodder. Because basically the so-called outcome of the War of the Gods was that all of the gods were destroyed, and Zeus's last act was to create the god-killer weapon that was Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
and Ares was the only other god left alive on Earth. So they established that gods are real, but then conveniently there will never be any more gods.
Right.
And that just seems short-sighted in my opinion.
Well, there are still Amazonians. There are probably satyrs around somewhere. I'm guessing Pan wasn't in the fight with the gods, so, you know.
Are there other pantheons that they use within the DC universe, though? Like, yeah. I just don't know. I mean, Marvel goes all over the place with that stuff, but DC doesn't tend to.
But, yeah, I mean, DC is going cosmic versus just, you know, maybe I should say galactic versus cosmic.
Well, DC does with Catholicism than with anything else. Because you have all the aspects, like, you know, death and dream and all those guys. I wouldn't
call that Catholic.
That's, well, no, like, but they're
religion.
They're party to, like, the line for Morningstar, Lucifer Morningstar, and angels, yeah. And, you know, that's all constantly being dealt with by Constantine?
Yeah, I get that. I just feel like they opened a vein in this universe that could have been tapped for other things.
But oh, yes.
Then they immediately, you know, killed the host so that there can't be. And well, that I felt a little hollow.
We can't say it's a flaw until we see later Wonder Woman movies and then feel that something's missing.
I guess so.
I just wonder if they did it because they had no confidence of Wonder Woman being a success, and it's like, we'll just kill off her main villain in the first one because we're not going to make any more, you know?
Well, you know what that means. They're going to bring Cheetah into the next ones, but I don't know how they're going to deal with the fact that she's been 52 and now she's a goddess. Because Cheetah was a good foil for Wonder Woman made of clay. It is not a good foil for Wonder Woman, the god.
Right.
I think that there's opportunities, I guess, for them to retcon this, but I just, in my immediate impression, I felt that that was a weird choice.
Okay.
Yep. So, any other thoughts on that, or shall we move on to, what do we move on to from there?
Well,
Zach, I mean, got an idea? Zach, you're being serious now.
Well, that's the end of the film.
Yeah, I mean, are there other things we need to cover, or do we want to do our wrap-up so like we usually do?
I mean,
there's one more thing we didn't talk about, the bat in the room.
You mean Wayne Industries delivering a picture tour on glass?
Yeah, Bruce Wayne was not in the film, but he was kind of in the film, you know?
Well, that was the tie-in to Batman v Superman, which also then ties it into Justice League.
Justice League, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was necessary. It, you know, yeah. It's somewhat innocuous, but it kind of had to be there because it's a cinematic universe.
It's like Thor deciding to go take a bath in the middle of fighting Ultron. You know, it's...
This one made slightly more sense,
though. Oh, okay.
Fighting androids, you get dirty.
or having
a roommate.
He's
a filthy, filthy boy.
Or Thor having a roommate, like, going on adventures with a roommate while Civil War was happening, which Daryl? They just dropped.
Yeah. I can't wait to see Thor and Daryl.
That is, yes. I thought that was amazing. And I hope there's at least some nod to Daryl in Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, that would be brilliant. There's got to be.
There has to be.
I believe in Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to DC.
I believe in Harvey Dent.
Oh, and did you like the portrayal of the Lasso of Truth?
Yes.
I thought that was well done. It was interesting to me that they had all these relics.
Can someone answer one question for me about the Lasso of Truth?
Yes.
Why does it give you a burning feeling?
It gives you a feeling to try to resist telling the truth.
Yeah, right. And that was a portrayal in this movie. That's not is that, canon.
Is that like Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire?
Maybe. I think it's more realistic than having it have some sort of psychosomatic effect where you just can't not lie. Like, that you're compelled to tell the truth against your will. Like, in this case, I actually thought that made more sense than the way it typically is.
Depicted. Well, I think it's kind of a combination of both. Because, yeah, it does have that hot burning sensation, but it was also clearly having a psychological effect. Which, you know, it's fine, whatever, that's what it is. It's the lasso of truth. I'm not going to dig into the science behind it, but, you know, it's I'm totally cool with it.
So which room in that tower were they hiding the invisible jet in?
Oh God! No, let's not go there. I was going to say Chipotle's has that nice burning feeling too, but you know it doesn't force you to tell the truth. It's just that,
I sometimes cry out lamentations on the toilet after Chipotle, and you know my many regrets.
But it's so worth it.
We didn't talk a lot about the stuff that happened on Themyscira or Paradise Island. Paradise Island. That's
the
why
island
I say that
was. The island, well, it's Themyscira. It was perfectly portrayed, I think.
But I like that there was at least some place in the world that wasn't Snyderized.
Yes. It wasn't. You notice they had, like, colors in there,
yeah.
Not black.
And sunlight.
Sunlight.
But the best scene on that island was when Wonder Woman pulled a Spider-Man.
When she was climbing the wall.
Yeah, when she was climbing.
Well, and that was again the story progressing as she began to learn that she was maybe a little bit stronger than normal.
Yes, right. And that I don't want to point any fingers here, but that was one of three innocuous elements in the film that were pulled directly from my book. That was like, hang on a second, did one of the 10 people in the world who read my book was one of them Patty Jenkins? Because
maybe it was. I might be number 11 now.
Yes. Yes, you'll know what I'm talking about then. And that's me patting myself on the back. I'm Zach Howell.
Author extraordinaire.
Yes.
All right, okay, so wait, you have to tell us what are the other two elements?
The pool in the cave that Steve Trevor's hanging out in.
Glowing water?
There's something very, very similar to that in Chiron's hangout in my book.
I thought that was and, more like, does it have that was more like Thor.
It does, yes.
Thor's pool didn't glow.
Once he got the lightning part, or Ra's al Ghul could have been in there.
By the way, Wonder Woman was wielding some lightning in this movie too, and seemed to be flying for a couple moments towards that during that battle scene.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Again, very Dragon Ball Z-esque.
Yes,
and I loved every second of it. Yeah. Kamehameha, mother forkers.
And what's the final element? Hold on. Zach?
Well, I guess we'll just have to read my book.
Yeah, you got to give him a hook there.
Oh, okay. All right. So everyone
is juicy. I'll tell you.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I am curious though. Like all the things, like the lasso, the shield, the sword, and apparently her wardrobe, all were these like protected artifacts of the Amazonians. But they didn't really address what any of their properties were supposed to be and whether any of the other ones, like the sword got destroyed, but I don't know if that means that it was really just an ordinary sword the whole time and on display, you know, as like a faux icon, or if it was supposed to have some abilities and we'll never find out what they are now.
Well, historically, all of those items were special. The belt was for strength. The bracelets were forged by Hephaestus and unbreakable. The tiara was supposed to be usable
magnetic
as a weapon. What?
Are they also magnetic to lead?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the bullets seem to come straight at the bracers.
I know.
She has quick reflexes.
But yeah,
she's like Drax.
Yeah.
I'll give you
but
that.
Yeah, nothing gets,
nothing
gets
over her head.
Right. But yeah, that's the thing, though. Historically, that was it. But you notice in here, she had those bracelets since she was little, and you never saw her take them off, and somehow they grew with her.
No, those were different. So you didn't have the same ones. Yes.
Yeah.
When she was a little girl, there were much smaller versions of them on her wrists.
Uh-huh.
And everyone was wearing bracers. Those particular ones, she wasn't wielding until it was Gal Gadot as Diana.
You don't see that, though. They could,
you do
see that. You see two other younger versions of Diana, and neither of them are wearing those particular bracers.
Mm-hmm. Do you want them to write in Sharpie on the little ones, not the later to come bracelets of?
I want to put a mark on it and, yes, then, and then compare.
Just
as
just some random bracers.
Yes,
but that's the thing that historically the bracers were Hephaestus forged.
Yeah.
But nothing was. You saw her grab the armor. You saw her grab the tiara. You saw her grab the sword and the shield. But where did she get the bracers from?
Well, she had the bracers.
She already had those.
Yeah, from where?
Why, if they were special, I don't know why she had them specifically, but she had the bracers when she was training with
right, but that's the thing. They were
Antiope.
That's the thing.
They are the...
That's a profoundly small bone to pick, and that's kind
all right, of... Okay,
oh,
so,
no, it's not a bone. I'm just wondering if they're ever going to say anything about it.
Do I need to teach you guys about Wonder Woman?
Hey,
They're the bracelets of... They're the bracelets of submission. She wears them to contain her own power within her. If she doesn't, her power gets out and she's unbeatable.
Oh, get off of Wikipedia. Well,
that's weird. But that's no. how they were filmed, though. They just seem to be
no,
bracers.
I think my guess is they're saving that for later on because remember, she was lied to her whole life. She was
I
the
know.
Weapon. So, yeah.
But it does seem weird, though, that she was wearing them well before she stole all the things from the armory.
That's actually, and maybe this won't ever come to fruition, but you could certainly see a path there. I mean, Hippolyta had always tried to hide her power from her,
right?
And those bracelets are sort of a conduit of her power, it would seem. So maybe that's exactly it.
That would be interesting.
She started wearing those at a point where she reached a certain age and her power would need to be contained, but she was never told.
Right. I'm going to guess that's not going to come true, but that would be cool, and hopefully it does. We'll see.
We'll see. So.
Okay.
All right. Are we done fighting about them now?
Are we ready to put a pin in things? Do you have a poll that you want to show us, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that real quick. I forgot.
Let's stop being so hard on her and show everyone Dave's poll.
The
poll about the movie.
Why?
Because reasons.
So we did a quick poll on Twitter yesterday, asking what did you think of the Wonder Woman film? And, as normal, we gave four possible answers for people to choose from. The number one answer, the first choice was best of the DCEU. Number two, it was just okay. Number three, it needed more Snyder.
Oh, God.
I contend with your answer choices, by the way, Dave. And finish reading the last one.
And where is Themyscira?
My issue is that in my book, it was just okay is a more positive statement than it was the best movie. So I think you needed different ranking levels than the ones you had available.
Yeah, all right. Well, the number one answer was best of the DCEU, 73% answered that. Great. 20% said it was just okay. 3% said it needed more Snyder.
that they were saying that ironically, right?
Yeah, that was one person just being a tool.
And 4% picked the Where is Paradise Island? And we actually got some responses on the poll as well. The Black Widow Origins fan film said nothing needs more Snyder.
That is true. Speaking of more Snyder, though, I'll just inject this, sort of getting us off topic. I heard another rumor today related to Justice League in that Warner Brothers is asking for significant reshoots. And being that that's in Joss Whedon's hands...
Right,
that could make for some interesting.
Well, let's also not go too hard on Zack Snyder at the moment because we know why Joss Whedon is.
Yeah, no, yeah. Clearly, he's justified in taking his leave, and you know our thoughts and.
But yeah, it will be interesting to see what Joss Whedon's effect is on Justice League.
Yes,
it'll be 100% cooler, or 20% cooler, I should say.
it'll probably at least be a point where someone makes some referential joke and Wonder Woman says, I got that reference.
Oh, no. All right. So, why don't we see, so we now know what the audience thought. Our audience thought the movie was only supposed to make projected $60 million opening weekend. It made $100 million domestically, $220 million worldwide. So I would say it's awesome. A hit. So
that's awesome.
I think
certified fresh by Rotten Tomatoes.
And I've read that.
Yeah, 93%.
The previous record for a movie directed by a woman for a box office weekend.
Well, it's about freaking time. Weekend.
Which, granted, the gender shouldn't matter, but it does. So, I'm glad that they got that win, and hopefully that record keeps getting shattered.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we go around, give our final thoughts and a rating out of 1 out of 10 capes?
Let's.
All right. Who wants to go first?
I will.
Okay.
Because it'll be the least articulate, and at least people will forget what I say then.
We barely listen to you talk anyway. So that's
good. I really shouldn't. If listeners haven't learned that already, you can go ahead and mute for the next 30 seconds.
In summary, he's just going to say, ZOMG, 10 capes. But yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So there's the little issue I'm having. I backed myself into a corner last time when I gave Guardians of the Galaxy 2 10 capes. But this movie is different. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 resonated with me a whole lot on a personal level because of the daddy issues you guys probably don't need to hear about. You're not my therapist. but that movie truly did resonate with me quite a bit. This movie did as well, but not as much as it resonated with my wife, and it couldn't. And I want to just give a little anecdote about that. At one point in the film, I looked over, and it was just a normal battle scene. It wasn't the No Man's Land, which was just so profoundly powerful. It wasn't that scene. It was just a normal Wonder Woman battle scene, which didn't really have emotions tied to it. But I looked over at my wife, and I saw that she was crying regardless. And in that moment, I was a little nonplussed because I was like, well, this isn't really one of those emotional scenes, but sure, whatever. So after the movie, we were in the car, and she said, in all the superhero movies I've seen, all the action movies I've seen, I've never seen myself as the hero. This is the first time I ever got to be the hero. And that was really, really something. And it made me, it all the years that I have, had my hero worship and got to see Superman and feel like a powerful Superman. And certainly, women and my wife said she can appreciate that, but it's not the same. It's not the same to be able to see yourself in that person's shoes. And she could see that with Diana. And for that reason alone, the movie deserves 10 capes. But because it was also just a great movie, it really was. I mean, it didn't even have to be. Like what it did on a social level made it perfect. And yet it still managed to be fantastic in every other way. It really, any tiny flaws in the film did not detract from the story or the enjoyment of it, even the choreography. I loved the fight scenes. They were awesome. I thought at times there was a little bit too much slow motion, but I still loved it. I mean, it was super cool. Like Diana sliding across the floor to kick the guy. It's just so awesome. And when she knees the guy through the window, just stop it. Just too ridiculously cool. Everything about it was great. It really was across the board. It was phenomenal. And for, that, what it meant to my wife and presumably many more women to see the effect it had was really something as well. So I absolutely have to give it 10 capes.
All right.
Wow. 10 capes.
All right, John, since you're the first to speak up to react, now it's your turn.
Okay. Well, yeah. First off, good luck, Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Because
I think we're going to need more capes.
I know, because at this point, it's, for the first time, Marvel is going to have to come up to DC's level.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say for the first time. DC came to the movies decades ago.
Yeah, like I said, so Marvel's going to have to come up to DC's level for the first time. the way Gal Gadot was portrayed, Wonder Woman was portrayed by Gal Gadot, the way the movie was directed, the fact that this is the first time I have seen Wonder Woman in real life doing a fight scene that was worthy of the Wonder Woman that Bruce Timm did in the movies and the animated series. And then just the way they portrayed World War One as just a hellscape, and then having the character react to it and have us feel that, you know, her reactions to it and have those reactions ourselves, the same reactions, which goes back to what Zach was saying. For the first time, you could put yourself in your inner shoes. When Trevor tells her, you know, the woman's asking her, please save my daughter. She's in the town over there. And Trevor says, no, we can't do that. And a woman says, screw that, throws off the cape and steps up. You know, that's when everybody in the audience cheered. And that's because we felt, yeah, screw that, Trevor. Go away. We got to take care of business here. And, you know, I think that's the reaction anybody who feels like they should be a hero and in their heart will do the right thing. That's what they wanted to do at that point. And that movie made you feel that, which is awesome. So, I think, you know, between that and just, I'm still a little bit off about the end, but the fact that the rest of it was pretty much flawless, I'm going with 9.5 capes.
All right. That's fair, I think. Ben?
I figured you were going to call me next. So, as much as I gave the guff for parallels to Captain America First Avenger, and those parallels were certainly there, but it did stand alone in a lot of ways as a unique superhero movie, and was well told. And I like the fact that, like, that they did face a real enemy that wasn't, you know, the secret Hydra faction within the Nazis kind of thing. That Ludendorff and Dr. Maru were real human, enterprising people trying to win a war that they felt justified in with you know, whatever means necessary, and that there was real attempt to depict something otherwise historically accurate, besides the fact that there was Greek gods and whatnot. And that, on the face of that, I think they did a pretty good job. I said my piece about how I felt about some of the supporting cast. I think they could have done a little bit more with some of them. I felt Etta Candy could have used a little bit more screen time and be less of a stooge for jokes, so to speak. So I think, all in all, I think that Gal Gadot was a 9 in a movie that was a 7, so I would have to give this an 8.
Okay.
Eight capes.
All right.
Hang on. At least give Gal Gadot a 10, and therefore the movie's 8.5. I mean, she was a revelation.
I cannot give her a 10 so long as my wife is alive.
Well, thanks. Now I'm in trouble, you bastard.
So,
I love you, honey. To be fair, my wife said she fell in love with Gal Gadot when we walked out of that movie, as did our couple of friends that we went with. I mean, she's remarkable. And again, it's not about her physical beauty, which, again, is noteworthy, but it's just about her presence on screen, her strength, her power. She is convincing as an actual goddess. It was remarkable. Sorry, I already said my part. Go ahead, Dave. You're up.
Well, building on that, yes, Gal Gadot, I definitely think she's became a star in this. In fact, I actually would compare her beauty-wise to Angelina Jolie, but a far superior actress.
I disagree, but continue.
You can disagree all you want. I don't think, you know. Because again, she has range, and she showed amazing range in this movie. And I think this is, again, this was her moment to shine, and she became a star in this film. Yes, it is the best of the DCEU movies. But that's like saying, you know, this is my best hemorrhoid.
Or look at this world's tallest midget.
Yes, look at the world's tallest midget. So yes, was it a good movie? Yes. Was it a perfect superhero movie? No. We've talked about it, you know. I had a couple minor issues with it, but nothing earth-shattering. Should people go out and watch this movie? Yes, definitely. Should they go multiple times? Probably. Because I think you're going to miss things the first time through.
Yeah, that's true.
I just want to see that No Man's Land scene again.
Oh, God, yeah.
So
that was like 15 minutes of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I think we all said it eloquently enough. I'm going to agree with Ben a little bit, but I'm going to give Gal a 10 and give the movie a 7. And so no, I'll give the movie an 8.5 and I'll give it a 9 altogether. 9 capes.
Okay.
So. That's fair.
I just my only caveat on the whole range thing is she had emotional range, which is a factor of good writing and good direction, and decent skill at acting. Whereas Angelina Jolie has depicted a range in character capabilities, in that she's played many different types of characters, and that's a different kind of range. And we hadn't seen enough Gal Gadot movies to say she has that kind of range.
All right.
But I would say, though, that she had more of a presence in this movie than Angelina had in any other movie. And I'll also say, since we're comparing beauties, that Superman, what's his name, Henry Cavill, Man of Steel. In Man of Steel, when he has a beard, he's more handsome than Thor with the beard. But when he's clean-shaven, Thor's more handsome because we're comparing beauties, and that's what we need to do.
Is there something you want to tell your wife there?
Oh, she knows. She knows I have a man crush on both of them. Yeah. She has a crush on Wonder Woman, as do I.
What he's really saying is he wants to grow a beard.
No, I don't. I've tried, and I can't pull it off, goddammit. So,
wait a minute. You've seen our beards, right?
So, I think that's why...
Can't pull it off? That's not a reason.
I think that's why Ben defended Angelina Jolie, because, you know... He's still holding out hope.
He's single now.
Yes, but you're not.
I can make my list.
All right. So, with all of that being said, and this wonderful review out of the way, before we wrap up tonight or this week, Ben, is there anything that you want to announce?
Well, I want to say that this review has been fun. As has been this ride, and I have greatly enjoyed being the Beard of Knowledge, which will not really go away. I will carry that title, you know, probably well beyond this. But unfortunately, life gets in the way of things sometimes, and in this case, you know, life has shifted me in other directions, and I will be parting ways with Superhero Speak. At least from a hosting standpoint and probably more and heavy involvement in general. So I just wanted to, you know, tell everyone it's been fun, and I don't regret a moment of it. Well, I regret a lot of moments of it. But
I was going to say I do. I mean,
not enough that I have regrets about life choices, you know, that got me here. So, you know, it's with a heavy heart that I must retire my my voice of reason.
Well, John and Dave, you've been with Ben longer than I have, obviously, but I would like to say that it has been a pleasure, my occasions hosting with you. I think you are incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly eloquent. Everything you say is well stated, and
that's what I've been
well reasoned
all this time.
Well, you did a damn good job, sir. So thank you. It has been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you, Ty. It's an honor. It's all mine.
And as for me, who the hell am I going to argue with now?
Dave is really easy to argue with.
But it's Dave, you know? I mean, like, I need – you're like – you mentioned the intelligent
brandy
thing, right?
If you drink more brandy, it'll seem more challenging.
Oh, an excuse for more brandy. Okay, that works. Okay, see ya. No, man. No, seriously, it's been great. Wait, 4.5 years, dude.
Yeah, I know.
It's been awesome, you know?
It's a long, strange trip it's been.
Yeah, or a strange long trip.
So, yeah. So, all I can say is, yes, it's been a fun ride. you will be greatly missed. And just remember, there's always a mic kept warm for you if you ever want to come back.
Sitting directly on top of it in order to keep it warm. It's going to be very uncomfortable.
That would never even be a question if you wanted to, you know, jump back in. You're always welcome. And everyone listening needs to, you know, the reason I wanted you to come on and do this is everyone needs to know that there's no animosity between any of us here. You know, we're still friends. It's not like we had a falling out, you know.
Not this time.
Not this time, yes. Well, you know, that's what real friends do, right? They argue and then they forgive. Yeah. And then sometimes they, you know, get revenge for the argument when you least expect it. But that's, you know, that's a story for another time.
To our listeners, and Ben, I thank you for this past 4.5 years. For our listeners, John and I are still discussing, you know, exactly how we're going to move forward with things now. We have people that are going to fill in lined up, for what doing Hostfuls going forward. But there'll be more information about what we want to do as it comes available. Cause again, we're still figuring it out ourselves. So, yes. So on that happy note.
Yes. By the way, I'm sure I'll continue to listen to the show, which will probably compel me to occasionally need to come on as a guest to to argue points that I will be screaming at my radio.
Yes. Yes. And of course, nobody does it better. Nobody does it quite as good as. So on that note, boys and girls, and to you, Ben, as you saunter off into the night, don't let your cape...
I was just saying it will be a saunter.
Not a shimmy, just a saunter, right? Okay.
Don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.